Hey, folks, this is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison, and every Thursday, we release these special episodes where we look back at content from the earlier years of the podcast. This week, it's the best of drug stories, number two. You know, whenever more than one story about drugs has been on one Risk episode, I can't help but think, be careful about those drugs. But they also might take you somewhere you didn't even know you needed to go. Now, in a little bit, we're going to hear from yours truly. But first, a story from the outrageous Canadian comedian Glenn Wool, who you can find at glennwool.com. Glenn shared this one at a Risk show in San Francisco in 2013. And here he is now with a story we call On Rohypnol and Kicking Shit.
Hello. So my story starts when I was like 22. I'd moved from Vancouver, Canada to Montreal, Canada. So I didn't really know much about the town, but I was there to further my comedy career, and I got really drunk one night, as you do. And the bars were all closing, and I was staying at my buddy's place, and I thought, I'm gonna walk back, but I'm gonna walk back via the Montreal Forum, where the Montreal Canadiens played. It was closing that year, and they were gonna move to a new center, and I thought, best take a piss on it before it's closed and you're not allowed to pee on it anymore. That was in my head. Because I'm a good Western Canadian boy, and if you get a chance to piss on where the Canadians play, you do. So in a very drunken state, I walk to the Montreal Forum about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I take a gigantic Molson beer piss all over this place. And I hear a car pull up behind me. And I'm like, oh, fuck. It's the cops. And you can't tell them, well, I'm from Western Canada. And I want to piss on your hockey team. You know, and then have to tell them in French, because that's the fucking rule. So I finish my piss, and I just hear like a car wait, and then I shake off like that, and I turn and put my dick away, and it's just a dude. It's just a dude. And I was like, yay! Just a dude! And I go up, I'm like, what do you need? He's like, do you know where the bar, the Stinky Pig is, or whatever the fuck he was looking for? I'm like, no, but let's go find it, man. Let's go find the Stinky Pig. So I get in this guy's car. And we're driving around looking for the Stinky Pig. And I'm like, you know, like, bars are closed, man. Like, I know. I checked, and he's like, well, I got vodka at my place. And I'm like, yeah! Fucking vodka at that guy's house! What I didn't know was where I was quite a renowned gay cruise. So I had gotten into the car with a gentleman who believed me to be a prostitute. With my introduction to him being, I just turned and waggled my dick at the guy. You could see how the mistake would be made. So we get back to his place, and the penny is starting to drop for me. What's going on? Because I just thought it was vodka. And that guy's house, yeah!
I'm sitting there drinking vodka, and he comes out in a towel, and he's got the sauna ready. I was like, oh, no. No. Sorry. I see where wires have been crossed. But no. Sorry, man. Didn't stop me from drinking. Like, I just stayed there and he was in his towel. Just fucking sitting there. And I'm like, okay, nah, it's weird. You, like, close the legs. I gotta fucking, you know what? I'll have one more vodka and then. And then I got to fuck off. And that's when I knew something was wrong. Because he, like, jumped up. He's like, no, I'll get it. I'm like, fuck, man. I know where. Yeah, okay, well, get the vodkas then. I don't give a fuck. And comes back, and I'm drinking this vodka. And about 10 minutes later, I'm like, oh, Dr. Feelgood has been making the drinks tonight. He's fucking slugged me. He's put a roofie in my vodka. What he doesn't know, because I was quite a fresh-faced young Canadian man, is that I've got a drug intake that you cannot fight with run Rohypnol. You bring one? No fucking way! I will kick the shit out of a Rohypnol. And he's fucking amazed, because he's put enough to dose a rhino. And I'm just looking at him like Robert De Niro in Raging Bull, like, you never put me out, sugar. You never put me out. So he's freaked out, because he's never seen anybody fucking fight it before like this. Like, I'm just getting goofier. I'm like, where's more vodka? Jesus Christ. Like, he's getting scared, and I'm like, it's time to go home. He's like, yeah, I'll give you a ride. Fucking gives me a ride home. Because he doesn't know what's going to happen with me. Like, I've fucking taken it further. So I'm in his car, and he's got, like, power windows, and I'm just thinking, brr, brr, brr. The whole ride. And he finally, like, he's getting agitated, and he's like, would you mind not playing with my windows? I was like, would you mind not trying to rape me? Fucking a-hole. So he got me back to my buddy's place. I went up and I got to the couch and I slept for a fair few days, man. Now, the reason I tell you that's part of the story is because years later, I was living in England at this point, and I had just gotten my first Australian tour, where I was going to have to go from England to Australia. And I went to this club in Birmingham, England, where I used to live for a long time, and I had a lot of friends there. And I went, look, I'm flying straight out of Birmingham to Australia on Sunday, and this was the Friday night. I'm like, let's get a load of pills, like ecstasy, and we're going to have a fun, great night. And he's like, yeah, cool. So he shows up to the club on the Friday. He's got like a fucking Santa sack of ecstasy. You know, he comes in the green room, fucking flops it down. I don't even ask no questions. Just fucking get it in there. Fucking take my ecstasy, I put my hand in, I give him his. He's like, no, I gotta take off, man. I just thought you wanted it. No, I got shit to do tomorrow. I can't take ecstasy with you tonight. And like, I'm in. I can't go anywhere. I'm like, dude, fucking. All right, well, get out of here. So I talk to the club manager, and I say, Like, do you want to come out to a bar with me? I'm, like, literally about to come up on ecstasy, and I've got nothing to do. And, everyone in the club, every staff, everybody was like, no, we've all got shit to do tomorrow. We can't go out with you. I'm like a fucking ticking time bomb. I'm like James Bond getting the laser on his cock. I'm like, what am I going to do? Like, is there any bars open? And he's like, well, there's one down the street, but it's like a half gay bar. And I was like, I don't give a fuck. I drink with gay people. I don't, like, I don't even understand what like half gay bar means. Like, is there a line of tape in it? Bunch of frat guys on one side. Bunch of people who aren't gay on the other. Oh! Oh, that's a little slice of genius right there. So, I show up to this bar on my own. I'm fucking wired on ecstasy, and it's coming off. I'm drinking these beers, and I'm just sort of fucking walking around, having a good time. Music's good. I don't give a fuck. I'm sitting there drinking a beer, and these two very, very gay men come and sit beside me. And they start inquiring as to what I'm going to do later that night. And I'm just talking with them, just telling them my story about the ecstasy and they going to Australia. And they kind of stopped and they went, you're not gay, are you? I was like, no, I'm not. And they're like, oh, okay, well, whatever, fuck. And then we just talked about football. You know? Like, they were hitting on me, and then they just found out I wasn't gay. And then they're like, okay, cool. We still like your energy. We like you as a human. Let's just hang out. And I fucking had a wonderful night with these two very homosexual men. But there was this other dude in this suit, and he kept coming up and grabbing me and shit. And the two other dudes were like, dude, fuck off. He's not gay. He's just here, you know? Don't be a dick. You know? just fucking chill. But this guy's fucking weird, man. You could see in his eyes. He was a fucking weird, weird dude. And our table got moved. They wanted to open up a bigger dance floor. So the staff came up and said, do you mind if we take your drinks to that table over there? We made you a new table. We just want this area for dancing. Yeah, man. Cool. So in the process of shifting all the drinks over, people get hung up, start talking and stuff. I go over and I get to the new table first. And the fucking weird dude is at the drinks. And he's kind of like fucking, he threw something in and walked away. And I saw it and I fucking remembered way back when. And I was like, so me and these other gay guys get back to they had names, by the way. Sorry. They were much more than just that, but I can't remember them. So we get back to the table, and there's a couple of beers lined up, and I shift the one that I seen the dude lurking around. I go, look, guys, that fucking weird dude, he was lurking around this drink. This one, the drink was mine. I think he's fucking, I can't say for sure. I didn't actually see anything go in, but I think something fishy's up. And because it was like that kind of last call, closing time kind of deal. The one dude went, yeah, that's probably a pretty good idea. The one dude who just finished his drink, this is the fucking English all over. Just fucking downs the pint. And I'm like, oh, I guess you're right. You're right. There was nothing wrong with it. 10 minutes later. Holy fuck. Like, he's just like, boom. And I'm like, I don't know what to do, but I think we should keep him up. Like, I'm thinking concussions, like, just fucking fight through it. Don't let him go to sleep, because I fought through it, and it can be done. So, but then, like, the staff is like, well, you got to get out of here, man. It's last call. So me and this other dude, we got, like, he's got an arm on each of our shoulders, and we're walking around the block of where the bar was, and I'm like, well, fuck. Look, I got a hotel room right close to here. Let's just take him there. We'll give him coffee, keep him up, and just, you know, make sure nothing bad happens. So me and this other dude walking this one passed out dude like this fucking Frankenstein in his way all the way to the hotel. And the night porter sees this coming. And it's like me and like these were obviously gay men. Like there was not like... I can't state this enough. Like, not dressed in tiny sailor outfits, but close. Close. So this fucking procession walks up to this night porter's hotel door. And he's like, whoa, 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 whoa. And he stops. I'm like, hey! I'm staying in this hotel. He's been slipped a date rape drug, and we gotta get him up to my hotel room. And that's how you get outside your comfort zone. I've been Glenn. Thank you. Good night.
We'll be right back. We're back.
This goes back to my 20s. It was the winter of 1994. And my little posse, my gay circle of friends, we entered this apartment way at the top of Manhattan Island. And as soon as I walked in the door, I heard this laugh coming from the other side of the room. This little, like, chipmunky giggle. Like a little kid was being tickled. And my friend Mark said, sounds like Mikey's here. Oh, boy. And when we crossed the room, I saw that this little guy, Mikey, he was an Italian guy with beautiful brown skin, brown hair, sparkle in his eyes, big grin. And someone was leaving the party at the time. And Mikey said to them, oh no, you're leaving so soon? And then he said, farewell and adieu to your fair Spanish ladies. And I burst out laughing because he was doing his impression of the shark hunter, Quint, from the movie Jaws, and that was an impression I like to do. So when I burst out laughing, he really lit up, and he said to me, oh, don't mind me, I'm just a big old fooler. And I laughed again, and soon I was making him laugh because I could match all of his imitations of Woody Allen and Oliver Hardy. Now, there happened to be this absurdly gorgeous kind of Abercrombie sort of blonde boy there at the party. So Mikey and I started entertaining each other by flirting with this blonde boy, only with the accent of Inspector Clouseau. The blonde boy was completely baffled and bewildered, but he was clearly, like, not interested in anyone at the party. He was just looking at himself in mirror after mirror after mirror. And I said to Mikey, seems like he'd be having a much steamier night at Pottery Barn. And Mikey burst out laughing, and then I did something that completely surprised me. I grabbed him from behind, around the waist, and I swung him around like you would with a little kid playing swinging statues. And he was screaming laughing now. It was way too affectionate, way too soon. But it felt so good. I didn't know what to do next. It was just this full body hug that came out of nowhere. And this might sound odd, but my brain might have taken a little while to catch up with what had happened there, but my body knew right in the middle of that hug, I was in love. Now, after that, Mikey ended up hanging out with my whole posse of friends all the time, and I kind of developed a hugging habit. Finally, one night, I wrote out this little speech, this little script that I presented to him over the phone that ended with, and so, would you like to come over for dinner sometime this week? And there was a pause, and he said, listen, Kev, I've been thinking about this, actually.
I just adore, I love how affectionate you are with me. But as a friend, I just don't think I feel the same way you feel, and I don't want to lead you on. Well, when I hung up, I kind of felt like the guy who gets all his intestines ripped out of him by the zombies in Dawn of the Dead. And then it occurred to me, Mikey would get that reference. I looked at my journal, and the last line that I wrote that night was, I have got to get over this tonight. 16 months later, I'd grown quite used to that intestines being ripped out feeling. All of our friends were sick of the Kevin and Mikey cycle. The pattern was that I'd show up at a party or out for a night of bar hopping and be determined that I was going to stay purely civil with Mikey and not let our skin touch. As the evening would wear on, Mikey would become kind of saddened by this, and he would kind of start craving my attention. So he'd do something to crack me, like grab my crotch or moon me. And of course, I would suddenly become a little puddle and be convinced that, oh my gosh, this is the sure sign that we're going to be lovey-dovey now. And then he'd have to push me away all over again. Now one night, he had no way to get home. And I had him over. And somehow, we allowed ourselves to be in the spoon position in my bed. And I found myself saying to him, God, I wish I could stop feeling the way I feel about you. But I love you. I love you. I love you. And he said, okay, enough of that talk. Enough. And he fell asleep. And for the next 2 hours or so, I lay there with Bonnie Raitt singing, I can't make you love me if you don't, in my mind on a loop. Finally, the week of July 4th, 1996 arrived, and Mikey and a few of my friends had secured a house on Fire Island. Now, in the previous months, I'd done something that was very uncharacteristic of me. I had exercised. I had become obsessed suddenly with like 15 hours a week at the gym. So I was really building myself up, and it was all preparation for Fire Island. There was a part of me that was like, I'm going to be so ripped that I'm just going to find a husband there on Fire Island and forget Mikey forever. And then a part of me that added, or this is what will make Mikey finally like me. So when I showed up at the house, it was all kisses and toasting of cosmopolitans. But Mikey was just coming out of the shower in nothing but a towel. And he kind of sashayed up to me and he said, oh, fancy meeting you here. And he flashed me his crotch like, you know, a pervert out on the street in a trench coat. I instantly became like Sylvester just spotting Tweety Bird and started racing after him around the entire property, just reaching to get that towel off of him. I'm running around, and I finally leap over a couch and my foot catches the end of it, and I end up with my right knee in my right eye. I had put all that work into prepping my body for Fire Island, and now I had a monstrous, bulbous black eye. Mikey could not stop laughing because he thought that this was the ultimate Laurel and Hardy moment between us. Another fine mess. But the big night was July 4th. Now, all of my friends had brought an arsenal of drugs. And the legendary DJ Junior Vasquez was playing at the Pavilion. And of course, the Enchanted Forest, where all the anonymous sex happens on Fire Island, was just overflowing with men. Now, party drugs had never gone over too well with me. They didn't agree with me, let's say. But my friend Mark had mentored me that evening. He said, "Kevin, take some ecstasy, but not on an empty stomach. Have a few vodka martinis first." So after three vodka martinis, I took the ecstasy and went out for a very warm and fuzzy night carousing about the place. And it was a lot of fun. I'll leave the part about the Enchanted Forest out of the story. But at one point, it's about 5 in the morning, and I find myself out on the beach alone. And I find myself obsessing over my obsession. What's Mikey doing right now? Is Mikey even wondering where I am? And why can't I stop myself from wondering these things? Before I knew it, that ecstasy, you know, it makes you rather fragile. I've got tears streaming down my face. Well, the moon is shining on me. And I don't know what I was thinking, but I thought, fuck it. I don't care who walks by. I dropped to my knees. And I opened my hands to the heavens. And I said, "My God, please help me get over him. I'm begging you. Help me get through." Well, I continued down the beach, and I ran into a couple of my friends. And one of them offered me what was called Special K. This is a powdered form of a tranquilizer that veterinarians use to put your pets out for surgery. So I took 2 little sniffs of this stuff and decided to head home, end my evening, and go back to our place. Well, the drug overwhelmed me immediately. I was like, oh my God, I have to get into a prone position in a bed as soon as possible. Then it was as if the gears on the film projector had gotten loose, because some images and sounds seemed to be moving in slow-mo and others seemed to be doing jump cuts. And the fan, the ceiling fan above my head, at times, it sounded like a symphony of noise. And then there was this point at which I started to feel like I was no longer on the bed. And I began to feel like I was floating upward and upward, and then progressing out into the living room. And from the opposite side of the room came Mikey. I was confused. I thought, well, why isn't he with everyone else? But he was laughing. Now, I couldn't speak. I couldn't form words. So I just started walking toward him. But his laughter just kept getting bigger and bigger. And then I noticed, so did his body. He was growing and expanding, and by the time he was about an arm's length from me, he was about 2 feet taller than me. And then I realized he was no longer flesh and blood. He was dissipating into a sort of mist of red and blue and brown. And I couldn't stop. I couldn't say anything. All I could do was keep moving forward. And then I felt this mist on my face and on my chest. And after a moment, I realized I walked right through him. And then I felt the bed underneath my hands and feet again and realized I hadn't gotten up out of bed at all. But once again, felt myself floating upward and out toward the living room. And there again was Mikey. And this time, he was angry. He was just full of rage. And as I'm going toward him, I'm trying to think what I can do to calm him down. But his body is expanding, and he's growing larger. And as soon as he's up close to me, he becomes a mist again. He dissipates, and I walk right through him. I'm in bed again, and then back in the living room, and there's Mikey, and this time he's crying, and I want to console him. And now I'm enjoying this. Now I'm feeling like, wow, I'm kind of relishing walking right through. It's as if I'm shielded from the effects that he normally has on me, and I'm just plowing right on. And the pattern repeated about 7 times. There was frightened Mikey, and Mikey with like childlike wonder, and seductive Mikey. And I just kept walking through until I passed out. And this might sound odd, and it might have taken my brain a couple of days to figure out what I'd been through. But when I woke up that next morning, my body knew that I'd begun to get over him, that I'd made it through. Thank you.
Risk. This is George Michael behind me now, covering Bonnie Raitt, of course, and we just heard from me. And if you have a story about a drug experience, good, bad, or ugly, pitch us at risk-show.com/submissions, and you can find all of our other special series, like the Best of True Crime Stories, Best of Happy Stories, Best of Sex Stories, and so much more at risk-show.com/special-series. Folks, today's the day. Take a risk.